Fellow alcoholics and friends, I didn't tell you before, but I'm an alcoholic too, and I hope a full-fledged one, as Harold said. It's my privilege tonight to introduce our next speaker for this session. And for those who may not know Howard's new position, I'll call it a position. Our Class B trustee to the World Service Board of Alcoholics Anonymous. There are 10 non-alcoholic trustees on the board. They're the Class A trustees. Our speaker is a Class B, so he must be an alcoholic. They created a new area and increased the number of the ratio of the number of non-alcoholic and alcoholic trustees from 7 and 8 to 9 and 10. Our area here is the East Central region, composed of Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan. This is the first time that, as Howard called it, the grassroots have had a part in selecting a trustee. He was chosen last April by the delegates from the United States and Canada, and the Board of Trustees, World Service Board members. And therefore, he will serve a term of 4 years. I've known Howard practically since I came in the program. I know his capabilities, and I think that he will do a wonderful job on this board. And our World Service Board is very important to Alcoholics Anonymous. They are the custodians, you might say. They help us stay on the right course. They help us carry the message to everyone who wants this way of life all over the world. And now it is my privilege to introduce to you our speaker, Howard B. from Parma, I believe it is. Lakewood, Ohio. Howard.
Thank you, Pete. Before we go any further, I would like to give you a word picture, in other words, an organizational chart of AA, to those of you who are not familiar with this setup. First of all, on the top are the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And directly below them come the general service representatives that they elect, one from each group. And the general service representatives, in turn, coming out of various districts in an area, elect a committeeman. The committeemen, in turn, are automatically in place the nomination for the office of delegate. And through the general service representatives and the committeemen, delegates are elected.
And so in Ohio, we have four delegates. And a trustee comes below them. Because the delegates are the ones that elect the trustees. And there's nobody below us. We are your servants. We do not govern. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't believe that there has ever been a time in my life that I've felt the weight of responsibility such as I felt when I was elected to this wonderful trusteeship in this wonderful society. So much for that. Isn't it wonderful to be sober? You know, some people have said that guy's nuts. And I think they're right. But I'm happy this way. It wasn't always this way. I'm here to talk to you tonight. The subject assigned is our challenge. And believe me when I tell you that I feel the greatest responsibility that I ever assumed in my life came when I became a member of AA. And as time goes on, I'm all the more firmly convinced that this is the greatest responsibility I ever assumed. Because I know that no other responsibility can I assume and succeed unless I'm sober. Everything else in my life is predicated on my sobriety, and my sobriety is predicated on the responsibility that goes along with membership in AA. You know, before we came to AA, some of us were known in our particular trades or professions as experts. People would say, oh, he's a wonderful doctor, but he thinks too much. And somebody else would say, you can't beat him as far as being a plumber is concerned. He's the top, but he drinks too much. And you know, when they put that behind our name, it wiped out all of our qualifications. Isn't that true? No matter how good you might be at anything, if you're an alcoholic, that is a drinking alcoholic, you are irresponsible, unreliable. Well, even another drunk won't trust you. And we come to this society because we're sick and tired of being sick and tired. We wake up in the morning and we try to piece together what we did and said the night before. And like a jigsaw puzzle, a few parts are starting to take shape. And long before the puzzle is completed, you look at it and you say, oh my God, I must be going nuts. And you know, you do that a few mornings and a few weeks in a few months, and you say to yourself, I'm never going to drink again. And that night, you're in the bag before you, the sun goes down. And you do this over and over again. And so when the time you come to AA, and you get that second step and it says something about return to sanity, you buy it right away because you knew you were nuts. Not all the time, but most of the time. How many of us doubted our sanity? And so, the most dubious person that ever comes to Alcoholics Anonymous, if you'll keep an open mind, I don't mean too open so it goes in here and out there. The most dubious person at the end of 3 weeks begins to believe. He begins to believe because so many nice things have happened, he can't continue to classify as coincidental.
there's nothing else to do but believe. Believe that these things are happening because it's all a part of a master plan. One of the first experiences so many of us have is this miracle that takes place. The compulsion to drink has left us. Right after the first meeting. This is one of the miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous. With what little we know about ourselves, about alcoholism, about AA, we're sober a whole week. And then 2 weeks. And then 2 months. And then 2 years. Isn't it reasonable to believe then that we'll never take a drink as long as we live? Of course it is. But why is it that so many leave our society? Why is it? Wouldn't you think that people, more people like yourselves, would take the time and spend the money to come to these affairs? Why is it? Is it because possibly, like I heard a few weeks ago in Florida, most people leave AA because they only got one third of the program. They only got one third of what AA has to offer. The 12 steps, the personal recovery program. They got sober. They got out of the doghouse at home and on the job. Got the bills paid, got change for 10 in both pockets. This is the end of the line. With some, like one of our friends from Cleveland said, it's because they only saw the parade. They never stuck around to see the big show. This I buy. What is the big show then? Certainly it's a big show to get sober. When the phone rings or the doorbell rings, you say, yes, but I'm not here. Don't have to do that anymore. That's wonderful, isn't it? Put your head on a pillow at night and go right to sleep. Isn't that a priceless privilege? I think it is. You go to the mailbox. No more letters from the finance company. Send in the door, we'll send out the van. Thought about those finance companies. I think that was one of the reasons I got here. I was obligated to 3 of them. And they all had mortgages on the same furniture. And the furniture was sold. In Ohio, that's bad. So, like many, I certainly enjoyed the company of AA. For one thing, I know for sure you people recognize what little dignity is left in the individual. Of course, we're all human beings and we're born with a certain amount of dignity, but it seems like those of us who get into the sauce too often, we lose a lot of dignity. But we come to AA and nobody questions what you got left in the bank or how much you owe the bank. They don't question your earning capacity or where you went to school. Nothing. All they're interested in, do you want to quit drinking? And so they take you on face value. No other society in the world that I know of has such a big, wide entrance. No matter who you are, what your track record is, you're welcome. In AA, if you want to get sober and stay that way. And thanks be to God that there is not a committee made up of men to decide who can come in. Because if there was, they'd have never left me in. And thanks be to God that there's no committee that assembles and says, you can't come back anymore.
because if that was true, I'd have been thrown out long ago.
So this is a society made up of people who want to get sober and stay that way. And through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, this miracle takes place, and we do get sober. But many of us became alcoholics insidiously. I became an alcoholic insidiously. I can prove that to you. When I started to drink, my mother didn't wait up for me all night. She didn't wait up for me at all. Because drinking was not a problem with me. It was no concern of anybody else's. Nobody worried about me. But as time went on, my mother was waiting for me. And some nights she waited all night, and I didn't come home for 2-3 nights. This is about the time when I was starting to smash up cars and get behind in my bills, and I was no longer responsible and reliable on the job. Big troubles came. Booze gave me temporary relief, just like it did you. You know, the bait changed, didn't it? Remember in the beginning how we could take a few drinks and go to a dance and everything was lovely? No fights, no paddy wagons, no nothing like that. And we drank because we had fun. At least I did. I had a lot of fun drinking. But when the ratio changed from 99.5% fun and 0.5% headache to 99.5% headaches and 0.5% relief, see, there was no benefits anymore from drinking at the end. I was drinking for relief. Relief from a lousy, stinking, filthy conscience that wouldn't let me alone. I had to be half-gassed in order to go to sleep at night, just like you. Or am I in the wrong place? I'd like to ask a question. I'm going to ask for some audience participation. If there's anyone in the house here tonight who professes to be an alcoholic, a member of AA, and came here who was not in trouble, please raise your hand. You want to check them, Bill? Take a look. Not a single hand. So we came here because we're in trouble. And the only temporary relief we could get from this trouble was booze. And for that, we paid an awful price, didn't we? And we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we find out that if we follow this program to the best of our individual ability, we don't have to drink anymore. Isn't that wonderful? Not the idea that we can't drink anymore. We don't have to drink anymore. Now, if in the beginning you feel sorry for yourself like I did, 31 years of age and I got to throw in this plunge. Isn't that awful? Why, my father's cousin is 84 years old. He could play King Arthur and drink beer and whiskey all night. He never sent a fender in his life. You hear me? At 31, I got to throw in the sponge. What a sacrifice. And I used to think about my mother. 60 years of age, she could take a cold bottle of beer on a hot summer day, and I couldn't even take a spoonful. Well, when it changes, from where you feel that it's too bad you can't drink anymore, and you know you're better off, you've been in AA for a while now, and you don't drink anymore, and things are starting to break a little better, but every time you go by a flue, and that odor, it seems like it smells so good. Now it stinks, you know that. And these beer signs and whatnot, and you say, gee whiz, too bad, but I can't drink anymore. And then when you get to the point where you know you don't have to drink anymore, this is when you guard and protect that position with everything you got. That's why you people are here. And believe me, I don't think I'm like the preacher who says every Sunday morning, the only tough part about this job of mine is I'm saving the saved. Well, I don't think I'm saving the saved. You people know. You're going that extra mile. That's why you're here. And that's why I'm here. I want to talk to you about this challenge. Possibly many of you have considered it. Some of you have considered some phases of it. I would like to have you not think of me as an individual talking to you, I would just like to have you consider the things that I have to say. Don't consider Howard Benhoff. Just what he has to talk about. When you and I consider that there must be millions of people in this country of ours who are suffering from alcoholism right now, this Friday night, payday night, and tomorrow they'll be suffering like a dog. Some will be in jail. Some will be killed. Their families are all suffering. Some of them possibly are relatives of ours. Some of them might be people that we went to school with. And yet you and I are here in AA, sober, a semblance of happiness, some semblance of well-being. Why? When you consider the people in your own hometown that are alcoholics and suffering, never will set foot in an AA meeting room, how come you are in and they are not? Some of them will never come in. Those that continue to drink, there's only one place for them to go. That's a drunkard's grave. Isn't this an awful way to die? And yet you and I have been spared this. We can stay sober just as long as we want to in AA, doing it one day at a time. We've got the tools. We know how to use them. Many of us have had sustained sobriety for quite some time. And yet that question comes up. Why? How come? We all know that there's too many things that happen that we can't continue to classify as coincidental. They must be miracles. We talk about a power greater than ourselves called God, who is the only source of supply in the way of health. We know that we, who are members of AA, are only the vehicles by which he can work through to help those who have the same common problem. This we believe. This is why we go to meetings. We know that when we go to meetings, we're available. We're available for this higher power to work through to help someone else. And we're available so that this higher power called God can work through other people to help us. There is no place else on this wide green earth for us to get more of the help that we need than in an AA meeting. Oh yes, we might meet in one another's home, we might meet in a restaurant, meet a few other boys. This is all good. But I submit to you there's no better place to get AA than an AA meeting room. If this wasn't true, why have groups? Why have our leader groups? Why have these conferences? Why have general service? Like the fellow says, can't we do this job better just from one mouth to another ear? Why do we need all of this other foul to rile and all these elective office and trustees and general service representatives and these people in New York and the intergroup in Cleveland and Detroit and Chicago and St. Louis and Columbus and Cincinnati and Akron and so on? Well, maybe he's got something. Certainly, I don't need much help. Go down a street, couple, three blocks and talk to somebody that looks like he's going to die shaken apart from booze. And I can give them the program, but I won't have a book to give them because that's been taken away. General service is no more. And I can't take them to a group because we don't need them anymore. What chance has he got to stay sober for me? So I asked me that question. I said, what religion are you? And he said, I'm Catholic. I said, you want to do without Rome? No, Well, the guy says, I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm a carpenter. I said, you want to do it out there international in Washington? I don't care what you are, who you are. You belong to something, and there's something up above there, above you, above the state level, and certainly at the federal level. They're doing things for you you can't do for yourself, just like in AA. Our General Service does things for us that we can't do for ourselves, not even at the state level. I'm not going to try to enumerate them, because I know you people are acquainted with these services. I'm here to talk to you about a challenge. How about doing a better job of carrying this message to others? To others who still suffer that are in AA. There are plenty on the outside that are still suffering, and we better do a better job of carrying that message to them by using our public information committee, for one thing. By getting these third parties better acquainted with our society. Because I truly believe that most people come to Alcoholics Anonymous today through the third party. The preacher, the judge, the personnel director, the policeman, the doctor, the psychiatrist. My God, folks, we've been having that help ever since the beginning of AA. But some of us seem to think that we've got the patent rights on how to fix these drunks. And we discourage these third-party people instead of encouraging them. So let's take another look at our society. And let's take a look at the people who are in AA that are still suffering. Only because I submit to you they could have a better sponsor who is better acquainted with the program. To be a good sponsor, that doesn't mean carry the person. It does mean carry the message. All of what AA has to offer. Of course, we don't dump all three legacies on him the first time we see him. We've got to spoon feed him the 12 steps. We've got to get him so that he can think for himself. And he can place proper value on this priceless privilege. And then not let him stop there. Like many people say, and I hear him today yet, I got sober on the 12 steps. That's enough for me. You don't need any more. Persons like that, when they tell that to a new person, this new person gets the 12 steps, he's sober a year, 2 years, 3 years. This thing becomes old hat, becomes monotonous. And this is why we have more people in AA from 1 hour of sobriety to 2.5 years than we got from 2.5 years on out. Believe me, check in your own group, see if I'm not right. Why should so many people leave our society after they've gained sobriety for a couple of years? I don't say in many cases it's because they're ungrateful. Not at all. I submit to you it's because they feel that they have gained everything when they get an understanding of the 12 steps. And after all, these 12 steps, again, I repeat, is no more than the individual recovery program. And to go on to the second legacy of unity, this is where we learn about our responsibility, our obligation to an ever-loving God through this society of ours, where we know the framework with which we can operate. And remember the first time that you were called to make a 12-step call? Remember how good you felt to think that for once in your life you could help someone else without an ulterior motive? To think that you had the equipment, that you had the tools, you could show someone else how to live by, live without booze. Wasn't that wonderful? Well, just imagine the 12-step work you can do at the world level with people who you'll never see. You will never hear from. But by the grace of God, and His grace does go all over this world, they too can come into this society.
and enjoy every single benefit that you and I have enjoyed and will enjoy. Only because we are willing to share. Not just share with those whom we'll see in our own community, but all over the world. This challenge is going to be with us as long as we live. That we do this job better every single day of our life. Doing this job better in the way of carrying the message to those who still suffer. In AA or still on the outside. And believe me, there are plenty of people in AA who still suffer. There's none of us can ever say that we've got complete happiness every day of our life. Some of us are satisfied with just a few minutes out of every day of a little bit of happiness. Because prior to AA was nothing but despair, hopelessness and helplessness, and fears and phobias, heartaches and tears. So whatever we get in the way of some semblance of happiness, we are grateful for. And you know something else about Alcoholics Anonymous that I have found? See, I've been a member of other things, too, before I came to AA. Church, lodge, trade association, civic groups, service clubs, whatever you think of. I used to be a joiner. I joined everything. And I like to make the acquaintance of mayors and police chiefs and judges. Because I'd always need them. Now they all look funny in underwear. I don't need them. But you see, we are not the same people we were before. No one can follow AA and stay the same. I'd like to prove that to you. Even those of you who are sober for possibly only 6 months. And to you who have been sober, some of you I see here for over 20 years. I know that the things that you did, you said, you thought about 6 months ago, and they didn't bother you. Today you can't do it. Isn't it true that your conscience became that much sharper? Isn't it true that by trying to live this program, we find that if we need this help, and we certainly do every day of our lives from an ever-loving God, we had better live the kind of a life that'll warrant that help. My girl Appleby said to me many, many years ago, excuse me, I'm going to have a drink while you're not going to have one. That was a dirty crack, wasn't it? He said, here's the drunk on the bottom of the pit. And this pit is at least 40 feet deep. And it's round. And it's steel. And it's grease. And the drunk is in the bottom of the pit. And it stinks. And it's full of heartaches and tears and fears and phobias. And he doubts his sanity. And in desperation, he reaches up. And he says, oh, God, please get me out of this. And God reaches down. And he grabs him by the hand. And he starts to take him out of the pit. But the drunk with this hand wants to take along some of that dirt. I'm not going to spell it out to you. You know what I'm talking about. And God lets go, because he will not take the drunk in the dirt. And some of us can get outside of that pit and then go back for the dirt. And God lets go then too. This is AA. This is the difference between Alcoholics Anonymous, as I see it, and anything else I've ever known about. People can go to church every time the doors are open. And yet, by the way, some of them perform, you wouldn't trust them any further than you can throw this building. And there's others can go to every stated and special meeting of the lodge. But by the way they perform, you're reluctant to call them brother. And in AA, this is the difference.
My friend Earl and I were going to Erie one day, and during the course of our conversation, I said to Earl, "I don't know how that guy stays sober." And Earl says, "It's none of your damn business." That's God's business. Again, I'd like to call your attention to the fact that if it was up to the standards of men, very few of us would ever get in. Darn few of us would stay in. Thanks be to God that it is God's standard. And you know, when it comes to helping each other, this bond of fellowship that was born with mutual trouble, we help each other because there is a bridge of understanding and because there is love. And the more there is of that love, one for the other, I truly believe the greater God can help. Because I also believe that He works through those who love the other. And it's by the degree of love that we have for each other that God can help, use us to help the other fellow. The degree of love that we have is the meter by which God can work through to help the other person. This I believe. Certainly, there is no one that is happier than a sponsor when his new person comes in and you watch them bleach out, you know. And the kids don't run under the bed anymore. They come out and grab their daddy and they love him and they hug him and they kiss him. Did you ever have this opportunity and everything, anything else that you were ever a member of? Do you think this all happened by coincidence? I don't. So the challenge is, are we going to do a better job of helping these people? Are we going to go through the book with them? Are we going to wait until they win a book? Or are we going to see that they buy one? Are we going to tell them about the 12 and 12? I wonder how many of us right now have the 12 and 12 in our homes. Where it's spelled out, the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. This, I believe, includes good sponsorship to know these things. To understand the 12 steps and the 12 traditions is a lifetime job, a full-time lifetime job. And let's give them this opportunity not to just see the big parade, but to see the big show, so that they can place proper value on this priceless privilege. Let's not say that they're going to have a conference next year in Cleveland. Let's see that they get there. Those of you who have been to these conferences, I don't believe we're any different than I am when it comes to try to explain what takes place. It's a spirit of oneness that prevails. It's something that builds up as time goes on. And by the time Sunday morning rolls around, you know what I'm talking about. You'll say to yourself, "How high is up?" And then we get back home and we try to tell people what it's all about. And then we wind up and say, "You gotta be there." Isn't it true? You gotta be there. Let's not shortchange these people in any single respect. Let's give them the benefit of everything that AA has to offer. Why do I mention this to you? Because I truly believe that of all the thousands of people that have come to AA since 1935, and especially since 1940, hundreds of thousands of people have come to AA. Many of them coming in right now by the hundreds every week. Our society should have at least 3 million members by now. Why haven't we got 3 million? How come all these people that came in the front door must have left the back door? Because they're not here. They're not in your groups. What happened? Are you sure? Am I sure that we did the best we could with what we had when it came to sponsoring these people? Did we go that extra mile to make them feel that they belong like someone else did for us when we first came in? Did we give them the impression that they could go out and fall down and as many times they picked themselves up they would be welcome, instead of telling them that this is a life or death proposition? It's life without alcohol or death with it. Do we belong to the school of thought that all you gotta do is go to enough meetings, it'll splash on? This, to me, is a poor excuse for sponsorship. Did we forget the last half of our 12th tradition where it spells out that it shall be principles above personality? The question is not who's right, what's right? Did we voice our opinion in a negative manner in the front of a new man, in the presence of a new man, giving him cause to shake his confidence in our society, in us? I think we're all guilty of that. So the challenge, as far as I can see, is first of all for us to place additional value on this priceless privilege. And when we assume the responsibility that goes along with membership in AA, let us not forget, it isn't a case of how many meetings you go to, how many meetings you lead, how many people you sponsor. No, it's intentions and motives behind everything that we do in these days. Are they proper? Are they honest? And this is what separates AA from anything else in the world as far as I'm concerned. This is the outfit where if your intentions and motives aren't proper and honest, God pulls the plug. And down the drain we go. Oh, I know there might be some of you out in that audience right now and say, that hypocrite's in out the way he's going. Both to you I say, by the grace of God, and only by Him and His standards am I sober, not by you. Isn't that an awful way to say? But this is AA, folks. No matter who you are, what you are, where you came from, what kind of a guy or a girl you might be or ever have been, we're here by the grace of God. And as long as we do the best we can with what we've got, God will see us through. But I'd like for you to remember, like many, many thousands of Alcoholics Anonymous members do believe, this is the greatest responsibility we ever assume. And this challenge that's with us every day of our life, that we assume this responsibility to the best of our individual ability, and we carry this on to others. Again, I repeat, not just give them the opportunity to see the parade. Bring them in and let them see the big show. And when they are in this position, like many of you are right now, this position, the inner part of the inner circle, where you know you don't have to drink anymore, and you're going to guard and protect this position with everything you've got, this is the payoff. When that monkey is off your back, and you know you don't have to drink anymore, and you know why. You know why and where this thing came from. And when you consider that prior to 1935, the best that medical science and religion could boast of was a 2% recovery, where did the other 98 go? It must have been a drunkard's grave. Where else could they go? And then to think AA comes along. I don't know what the batting average is. Maybe it's 30% of the people come in. Maybe it's 50. I don't know. But if it's only 30, it's 15 times better than there was before AA. And God left us with enough buttons that we could comprehend this simple program. Then we come in with nothing but hope. Then we stick around until we get saved. because we're a dubious kind of individual that's alcoholic. We don't get faith until we experience it. It isn't what we read or what somebody tells us. It's what we experience, and this is what our faith is built on. And so we can become instruments of a higher power by which others can be restored to society and to God. This to you, I submit as a challenge. Why? How come? It's because, in my belief, there was an ever-loving God that loved us first so that we could love Him. Thank you, Howard. I think that the panel and Howard has put this conference off in high gear. What do you all think? I want to thank you for your kind attention, your indulgence with me, and I will see you all tomorrow morning, I hope, God willing, at 9:30, the panel, our second session, Unity. So until then, so long. Oh, I'm sorry. Now we will stand and pray the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever.